Hallo und herzlich willkommen zum Seawolves Podcast, dem Podcast mit dem Blick hinter die Kulissen des Rostock Seawolves e.V., präsentiert von den Stadtwerken Rostock. Heute zu Gast ist Tyler Nelson, Vereinslegende, Aufstiegsheld. Ja, da kann man die Superlative gar nicht genug bemühen. Jedenfalls nach dieser Achterbahnsaison habe ich mit ihm gesprochen. Der ganze Podcast ist auf Englisch, aber keine Angst, in Kürze werdet ihr das ganze Stück auch auf Deutsch finden, entweder im Buch zum Jubiläum oder auch auf seawolves.de. Jetzt aber viel Spaß und gute Unterhaltung. Okay, Tyler Nelson, part of the Seawolves podcast. Happy to have you here, Tyler. What a roller coaster ride it was for a season. Let's dive into it. Let's talk about that. How you feel a couple of days after we accomplished Klassenerhalt?
Yeah, danke. Thanks for having me. Obviously this year was a tough year for the club, but you know, we kept the class, and that was the most important thing through the second half of the season for us, was to stay in the BBL, and we did that. Obviously, you know, we had bigger goals and ambitions, but that wasn't the case this year. But overall, you know, we stayed in the BBL, and we can move forward and look forward to that as a club and a team next year.
For me, it seems that you carried the club or the team on your back, on your shoulders. You had tears in your eyes when you scored 31 against Ludwigsburg. How emotional was that victory for you?
Yeah, that game was, you know, very emotional. Second to last home game. Ludwigsburg is, you know, a playoff team, really good team. And we needed wins with a few games left in the season. And, you know, we got that win. And obviously, like you said, I had a really good game, 31 points. And, you know, it was just emotional for me because I wanted to get as many wins as possible to keep the class. And at that point, we were in a tough situation. And, you know, a lot of people didn't expect us to beat Ludwigsburg, and, you know, at home with a great crowd, and we pulled off the win, and all the fans there to support us. And it was just emotional for me to, you know, have all the fans there thanking us for the win and just giving us support, even though it was a tough season with not enough wins or not as many wins as we wanted. But yeah, we got that win, and it was, I think, emotional for everyone, not just me. So that turned out to be, you know, a big win, and probably one that, you know, kept us in the BBL.
Yeah, I mean, the last road game was at Munich. Unfortunately, we lost. But take us through the final minutes when you went to locker and watched the other game, Crailsheim against Berlin. Yeah. What went through your head? How was it?
Yeah, it was crazy. Obviously, we knew that Berlin needed to beat Crailsheim if we weren't going to beat Bayern. So the game ended, and I heard that, you know, they were up like 8 or something with, I think it was a little over 4 minutes. And I actually had my TV interview post game with DYN and the BBL, and the guy that was interviewing had his phone out live stream of the Alba versus Crailsheim game. And it was like, I remember it was 3.5 minutes left. And it was 86-83 after a timeout, and Alba was up by 3. And then I did my interview. It took like a minute and a half. I wasn't looking at the phone, and then he showed me right after the interview, and it was 92-83 Alba. So they went on a little bit of a run there, and they had the lead with, you know, just over 2 minutes. And then I went back in the locker room with everyone, and of course everyone was, you know, looking on their phones and following the score. And then there was like a minute left, and I think they were up like 15 at that point. And then, you know, coach came in the locker room, and we all knew that, you know, they were going to win. Alba was going to win the game, and we were going to be okay. Obviously, it's not the best way to celebrate the end of a season, you know, losing, losing a game, but at the same time, given the circumstances, you know, we needed to have Alba win that game if we weren't going to beat Bayern. And obviously I thought Heidelberg was more than likely going to beat Tübingen, which they did. So, you know, you can call it luck, you can call it whatever you want, but at the end of the day, we got enough wins to stay in the league. That was the goal for the last couple of months of the season.
Unfortunately, it didn't work out at the games against Kreuzheim at home and on the road in Braunschweig, where you had that 10 points in like 140 seconds in the end to tie the game, but it didn't work out. So would you describe yourself as the leader of the team, or was it another guy?
I mean, Chris Carr is our captain. You know, he's the vocal leader. He's been here with the club the longest. But, you know, I definitely think I stepped up and was more vocal throughout the year, talking to guys. And, you know, obviously, given the circumstances, we lost, you know, 12, 13 games, whatever it was, in a row throughout the year. It was hard times for the players, hard times for the club and the fans. But we did stick together. You know, there was different ways to go about it. The club, you know, could have, you know, gotten new players, got a new coach, done multiple different things. But they showed faith in us. They stuck with us. We kept the team pretty much the same, besides adding Augustine and Lester at one point. And yeah, I think it paid off. I mean, we stuck together. We didn't get the, you know, perceived wins that people expected us, or we didn't get, you know, a win ourselves to, you know, maintain the class with a couple of games left, which would have been great in Braunschweig or at home against Karlsheim. But, you know, we did get two huge wins against Würzburg and also at home against Ludwigsburg. And those two games were right there, really, really did it for us. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of leadership, I think I stepped up. But, I mean, there was multiple guys this year, with Chris, with me, you know, that stepped up and you know, showed leadership.
Besides you and Chris, there is Sid and Till who were together like 4 years now, since Bauermann was still part of the club, Dirk Bauermann, who brought you guys here. I guess you built the mental, how you say, like knew where you went through. I mean, you were through all the highs, through all the peaks of the club. Celebrated promotion. You promoted to first league, and you know how to win. How did you four guys talk about that final game or the to make it to stay in the league after the Munich game in the locker room?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, with Chris, me, Till, and Sid, I mean, they were here the year before I got here, and I came, you know, halfway through that season, you know, and the year before we won the Pro A championship. So, yeah. I mean, I've been with those guys for a long, you know, we moved up from the BBL. I mean, we moved up from Pro A to the BBL, and then, you know, this year we stayed in the BBL exactly, you know, 2 years, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, you know better than anyone, but I think on May 12th was when we won the Pro A championship.
Yep.
And then now, May 12th, a year later in Munich, we maintained the class. Obviously, 2 years later, obviously it wasn't a win, but, you know, we accomplished the goal that was in place at the time. So, yeah, I mean, we've been through a lot, you know, with Dirk Bauermann, and then, you know, Christian taking over and winning a Pro A championship, and then the next year, you know, finishing ninth in the BBL, first year in the BBL, overachieving and having a great season to, you know, this year, having a tough season, but, you know, maintaining the class. So it's, we've, us four have, you know, been together and been through a lot. Yeah, it's a lot about us and the team, and I'm happy to be playing with those guys.
Yeah, you've been talking about Pro A, BBL, and you were one of the guys in the first year of BBL to manage the adjustment like nothing happened. I mean, from Pro A to BBL level. How did you manage that? That was terrific. Or did you have any problems first?
No, I mean, I always, you know, coming from America, playing Division One, playing in the G League, I always knew I was good enough to play at the BBL level. You know, given the situation during COVID, when I was in America and I was in the G League, you know, I wanted to play during that COVID year. So I didn't care whether it was, you know, second league Pro A or wherever it was. And, this was Dirk Bauman was the, you know, the first coach in Europe to give me an opportunity to come over in the end of January of that season and finish the last, you know, 2.5 months with the team. And obviously it was an adjustment coming over to a new team, to, you know, new country and everything like that. And I didn't really get the, you know, the minutes or the opportunity to really, you know, show what I could do. But I understood that going into it, coming into a team late, that my role was going to be limited. But, you know, the next year when, you know, Christian took over and he wanted me back, and, you know, I was comfortable in Rostock and I knew the league and everything. And I had a really, really great season that year in the Pro A when we won it all. And, you know, transitioning to the BBL, you know, I knew it was going to be a much, you know, bigger physical, you know, obviously, you know, better talent all around than the Pro A. But I knew with my game and everything that, you know, I would fit in and adjust. So I wasn't, honestly, wasn't worried about that. That was something that was, you know, pretty natural to me. I almost was ready for the challenge and to prove, because obviously, you know, a lot of people think that about, you know, guys from that haven't played in the league before, or whatever, they have to prove themselves. And I understand that from a media standpoint and from a coach's standpoint and league. But I knew that, you know, once I was there, I was going to perform and show that I belong.
Do you remember your breakout game? I mean, the last game of the season 2021, when we played against Jena, we're down like 20 at halftime, and then you stepped up and hit like threes from anywhere.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was actually talking with Chris about that the other day. But yeah, that game was crazy because it was the last game of the season. And that was the COVID year when they did the two different, you know, brackets for playoffs.
Yep.
And Jena was playing us here in Rostock. And if they won the game, then they were going to get promoted to the BBL. So that was important for them. And we were done. We had already lost. We weren't going to move on. So that game technically, you know, it didn't mean anything. And I hadn't been playing much the games before. I was the foreigner that was sitting out. And I remember, you know, Dirk came to me the day before I practiced and said, hey, you know, you're gonna play a lot tomorrow in the last game. You know, thank you for dealing with the situation the way it was. And, you know, just do your best tomorrow. But just so you know, you're going to play a lot. So I was excited to just finally play and get the opportunity. And, yeah, I had a good game. Chris had a good game. And, you know, we beat Jena and, you know, kind of knocked them out and ruined their chances of moving up that year. But I do remember that game. I think I had like 5 or 6 threes, played really well. And we were, like you said, we were down 20 at the half or something like that and came all the way back and won. So it was a pretty cool game. And yeah, I guess kind of my breakout game for Rostock moving forward.
Yeah, since then, I dived into statistics. You know, I'm the stats guy on the club. So it's top 9 all time in games played. 123 since my recordings date back till 2003. 1800 points, top 3 best import scorer ever, and 31 points, season high, career high in BBL against Ludwigsburg. We talked about that game,
and
that performance May 12th, 2022. I mean, let's talk about the shot again. Shot for Eternity. We did that documentary about that. Do you often think about that shot that made you immortal for Rostock?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think about it. It was, you know, it was a special moment for the club. And obviously, you know, I've been here for over 3 years now. So, you know, I have a lot of ties to the club. I'm happy here in Rostock, and it does really, I've said this before, it does really feel like my second home, back home, as obviously back home in America. And I'm really comfortable here, and I like the club. I'm happy here. And, you know, obviously, you know, my name is attached to that moment because of the shot and move on to, you know, winning the championship and moving on to the BBL. So, it's obviously an incredible moment. You know, as a player, you always dream of, you know, hitting the game-winning shot at the buzzer to win the game, let alone hit the game-winning shot to, you know, move on to the championship and, you know, move your club up to the next division in European sports and basketball and soccer. Like, that, that's the goal, you know, as a club, you build your way up from league to league. And for Rostock, first time ever being up in the BBL and to win the way we did was special and cool. And obviously, yeah, a shot for eternity is what you guys call it. And it really is, because it's, you know, it's history and something that, you know, the club will always have and I'll always have and be proud of.
Yeah, we already talked about the heart of a champion that you have, because 2 or 1 week later, after hitting that shot against Jena, we had that that war game, I would call it, at Tübingen, with two injuries. Yeah. Nigel and you had to stay overnight at a hospital. Tell us about your heart. I mean, your leadership, your mentality. Why you want to win as bad as possible? This is impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been competitive, and, you know, given the situation here in Rostock, you know, having the goals we did, you know, that season or the expectations we had to, you know, win the championship and move on, and to, you know, win in Jena in the semifinals to move on to the championship, knowing that we're, you know, going to be in the BBL. Obviously that's the main goal, but at the same time, you know, Tübingen was the other best team in the league that year, in my opinion. And we knew that, you know, the championship matchup or the final against them was going to be a tough one, physical one. And, you know, we won the first game against them good. So the point differential, I don't know exactly what it was. I think it was like 10 or something, maybe even more. So we just, 8 or something. We just needed, you know, to not lose by more than that or whatever the situation was. But, in Tübingen, it was a physical game back and forth. Nigel got hurt, I got hurt, but we both continued to play, and we were able to pull out the championship there. And it was a special moment. But yeah, it was cool to finish, not just, you know, winning, being in the top two and moving up to the BBL, but winning the actual Pro A championship as well.
Yeah, and then we moved up to BBL. And I guess a lot of story has been told about that first year. That was also impressive, four wins to start the season, together with Salo Mokbe, Jaquan Lewis, Nigel Pierce, and you, all the other guys on the squad. There have been a lot of players who promoted with us, who stayed in the first year. And then we had like this break for the second season. Okay, let's talk about how you became the shooter you are. I mean, when did you start playing basketball and knowing that your main ability is to shoot from far beyond the arc?
Yeah, no, I grew up in a basketball family. My dad was played himself, and then he was a high school coach up until I was about 10 or 11 years old, and then. Since then, he's been working in the NBA as an advanced scout. So, you know, he got me into the game when I was young, 5 or 6 years old. I fell in love with it at a young age. I was always in the gym with him, with his team and his practices ever since I was a little kid. And so since then, basketball was my number one. I played other sports like golf, baseball, things like that. But I knew it was always going to be basketball. And ever since a young kid, when I was in, you know, fifth and sixth grade, 10, 11 years old, things like that, I was a good shooter, and I knew that was what my best skill was going to be. So I've always been a shooter. That's kind of what I pride myself on is shooting. And I guess it's just a mixture of, you know, getting into basketball at such a young age, really falling in love with it and enjoying it, not just doing it because I was around it, but really, really loving it and loving basketball, playing as much as I could as a kid. And I guess just playing so much and building those mechanics and having my dad be a coach and helping me with my shot, I guess it just, you know, that was what it was for me. And yeah, I guess when you think of my game and my skill, it's obviously shooting. So that's what.
Yeah, you grew up near Boston, so the Celtics were part of your development, right? Or did you have any other clubs you had as a favorite team?
No, it was always the Celtics. I mean, when I was growing up, it was a great time to be a Celtics fan, like it always is. But I was growing up in the era of, you know, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo, those teams that, you know, went on and won the championship in 2008. So, I was watching the Celtics, and that was always my team.
So Ray Allen was your favorite player because of his shooting?
Funny enough, Ray Allen actually wasn't my favorite player. I liked Ray Allen, but my favorite player on those Celtics team when I was growing up was actually Rajon Rondo, okay. Which is funny because our games are, you know, different. He's a point guard, passer, and a defensive guy, and I'm more of a shooter and a scorer, but I just love the way he played, and I was just drawn to him, and he was my favorite player on the Celtics and one of my favorite basketball players ever. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Besides that, you had any role models? Your parents, of course, then Rajon Rondo. Anyone else? Any shooters from the league, from league history?
I mean, Steph Curry. I don't emulate my game after him or try and be like him, but just the way he's the greatest shooter ever, hands down, I believe. And just the way he shoots and his confidence and the way he plays the game is incredible. And watch him anytime I can, and just the way he shoots the ball off the dribble and catch and shoot. Like I said, he's the best ever. So he's someone that I follow and respect, and I'm a big fan of. And someone else is actually Gordon Hayward, who plays on the Oklahoma City Thunder right now. When he was with the Utah Jazz when I was younger, when I was like 13 through 17, my dad, I told you, worked in the NBA. He actually worked for the Utah Jazz. So I kind of developed a relationship through him when Gordon came to Boston one game to play the Celtics when he was with the Jazz. My dad brought me to the game. This is when he was, you know, first in the league, first couple of years in the league. So he was, you know, 20 at the time, and I was, you know, 15, 16. And I just remember we had a little conversation before the game. He was really nice. We stayed in touch, got his phone number, and we've been friends ever since. So, you know, he has his own signature shoe now. He sends me those, and, you know, he follows us, the Seawolves, over here.
Oh, really? Gordon Hayward follows the Seawolves? Wow.
He does. Yeah, he is. I'm not sure he watches games through
DM. That's invite him for next season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think he watches games or anything, but he follows the scores online on Instagram. He'll text me, you know, every once in a while, checking in, and I'll text him when his NBA season's going on, and things like that. But yeah, we've developed a friendship, and obviously, you know, he's had a 10-plus year career in the NBA and done really well. A really good guy, and we've become friends over the years. So that's definitely another basketball role model.
Mm. Talking again about the player that you are, how many shots you take per day during regular season, during practice?
Yeah, a lot. I don't have a specific number, like where I say, oh, I need to come in and, you know, shoot 500 shots every day. Kind of just depends on, you know, what practice is that day, how my body's feeling or how tired I am. But I always, at one point of the practice, you know, either before or after, get a good amount of shots up, and then obviously during practice as well. And then, you know, same thing in the summer, obviously during the off season, when the season ends, like right about now, I take a couple weeks off to relax and give my body some rest and some time. But then once I get back in the gym, you know, I'm always, you know, getting up shots in the summertime and working out. But during the season, obviously, you know, every day we have practice, I'm getting up, I would say, at least a couple hundred shots. So, but I don't have like a specific number or anything like that, but definitely a good amount of shots.
Mm. What part of your game you can improve? I mean, there's always part of improvement.
Yeah, always. And basketball is always parts of improvement. I think, you know, when I was back in college, you know, I was more a shooter, and then I developed into more of a scorer. And I think the same situation kind of happened when I came to Rostock. When I first came to Rostock, I was, you know, just a shooter that, you know, first year in the Pro A, and then, you know, last year in the BBL, a shooter. But I showed that I could do some other things, like, you know, taking the ball to the basket and not just three pointers. And I think I did that even more so this year. You know, obviously shooting is my best skill in my game, but I also can do other things. And then in terms of improvement, obviously, you know, defense is number one. Everyone can improve on that. And, you know, offensively, you know, I played a lot with the ball in my hands this year. So passing and playmaking, things like that are two big things that, you know, I want to improve on and can continue to improve on is, you know, scoring. Obviously scoring is number one, that thing that I do best, but obviously, you know, playmaking I can do as well, and then getting better defensively. So those are the areas I would say.
Mm-hmm. Your father was a coach. You had a couple of coaches in high school, I guess, and in college, in G League, then Dirk Bauermann, Christian Held. What is the best advice you took from one or from all of the coaches so far on your career?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one thing that sticks out to me was when I first came to Europe, you know, it's different than, you know, college or even when I was playing professional in the G League. That's only like 5 month season. You know, when you come to Europe, it's really, you're over here for 10 months and, you know, 9 months, even longer if you make the playoffs. So it's really a long season. There's a lot of ups and downs, lots of goods and lots of struggles. And I think my first year when I was over here, you know, if I had a really good game, I was happy. But then if I had like a bad game, I was super disappointed and mad and frustrated. Or if I had a couple bad games, I was, you know, super mad and frustrated and it was in my own head and overthinking and making the situation worse. And then I think this year and last year, I really, you know, found peace and realizing that every season's a different journey for you. And, you know, there's going to be good moments and there's going to be bad moments. But if you, you know, work the same way and put the work in and stay positive, even through the good moments and not, you know, think, you know, you have everything figured out when things are going good. And then when things aren't going good, to think that, you know, you have no control or have, you know, nothing going on. But the reality is that it's basketball. There's going to be good days. There's going to be bad days. So just kind of to stay positive, stay in the middle. And you know, if you work hard and you do things the right way, then things will work out in the end. I think that's the best advice I've got.
Yeah. I guess your girlfriend is also playing a big part of it to
yeah.
to be not too high, not too low. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. To settle, no, it definitely, yeah. Definitely helps having her here and having something other than basketball just to worry about and focus on. And it's a good situation. Like I said, I've gotten really comfortable here in Rostock, been here for, you know, like almost over 3 years now. So I've, you know, I do feel like it's my second home.
Coming to the final questions, where did you study in college, and what job would you do if you were not a pro baller?
Yeah, good question. I studied business management and marketing in college. So that was my major and that was my focus. So, if I wasn't, when I'm done playing basketball, there's a couple things I think I would do. I could see myself potentially getting into coaching. That would be one thing. And then the second thing would be, you know, something in the business world, working for a company on the management or marketing side or finance side of things, something business, but related, at the same time, I think would be something that would keep me interested in. But yeah, I would say one of those two things would be what's next for me after basketball.
And learning German. How good is the German?
Yeah, I gotta learn German. So that's on my list of things.
You will start learning German, or you already started?
I have already started. You know, I'm taking some classes, learning a little bit. So the goal is to, you know, continue to do that, and you know, try and be able to speak a little bit more than just Danke. So
and moin. Yeah.
Yeah.
So last question: how you spend your summer, Tyler?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, now it's, you know, middle of May. The season just ended. We had our last game a couple days ago. So right now I'll go on vacation for a week, and then I will go back to America, spend June there with my family and friends relaxing in July. And then, you know, beginning of August, come back to Europe and, go from there. So that's kind of how I spend it. I go home for the summer back to America.
All right. Anything else you want to give advice to the kids who admire you in each home game and each road game throughout the league? I see a lot of kids wearing your jersey, wanting autograph and stuff. So what advice do you give to those kids?
Yeah, like you said, it's definitely cool. Like I've been here for 3 years now, so you know a lot of people know me, and I get a lot of recognition. And I want to be a positive influence on the kids in the Rostock, and I think I've helped grow basketball. I think over the last few years, more kids are in Rostock and Mecklenburg-Wolfenbüttel are falling in love with basketball because of the Seawolves, and I think that's a good thing and a positive thing. And every year the club grows, and there's more teams and there's more kids involved. We have great support in the Stadthalle. We always have a good amount of fans there, like you said, that wear our jerseys and support. So yeah, just trying to be a positive influence and play the game the right way, and hopefully the kids see that, and you know, they see my shooting and everything like that, so that's probably what they like and they want to do. Everyone wants to be a shooter and shoot threes and things like that now. So I love the support. I love the fans here. They're great to us, even through this tough, challenging season we had this year. And going forward, I hope they will. I know they will continue to support us and plan to have a good season next year. So yeah.
All right, it's a wrap. Thank you very much, Tyler. All the best for the summer. And see you soon. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Tom. See ya.
Ja, das war unser Seawolves-Hörspiel, präsentiert von den Stadtwerken Rostock, dieses Mal mit Tyler Nelson. Und wie gesagt, falls es euch mit dem Englischen nicht so vertraut ist, dann gibt's das Ganze auch bald als Geschichte zum Nachlesen auf Deutsch. Entweder im Jubiläumsbuch 30 Jahre Rostock Seawolves Basketball oder eben auf seawolves.de. Ja, ein bisschen längeres Stück zum Nachlesen, die Geschichte von Tyler Nelson. Freut euch schon auf den nächsten Seawolves-Podcast, der kommt in Kürze raus. Und bis dahin eine gute Zeit und alles Gute. Seawolves.